Well, let's start with what's your musical background?
Well, my musical background was, I guess like most guys of my era, you know, it was just something I was born to do. I started when I was about 5 years old, started singing when I was about 5 years old, and then was singing in those days, obviously before the Beatles. It was mostly kind of a cappella groups, doo-wop groups and stuff like that, and whatever the pops singers were. You know, there was Elvis Presley, but then Elvis went off to the Army, so there was that interim in between with the teen idols, like, you know, the Frankie Avalons and stuff like that. But I was into, like, in those days, probably more like Frankie Lyman, the Teenagers, and things like that. And then, but I was obviously totally into the Beatles and the Everly Brothers and things. And then, I mean, Elvis and the Everly Brothers. And then I, you know, when the Beatles came out, I kind of got of age. And then I started really getting into the guitar a lot. And from that point, started putting bands together. And that was it, kind of on-the-job learning, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, what can you tell me about Valentine?
Well, Valentine was started in 1968. I'd been with a group called the American Tragedy, and we'd won, like, the Rock and Roll Championships of Philadelphia. We were really a good group, and we didn't do the run-of-the-mill stuff. You know, we did, like, Love and Spoonful, the Young Bloods, the Byrds. Instead of, like, you know, we weren't really doing, like, Knock on Wood and Hold on, I'm Coming, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're into that. So at that point, the group of that era, what happened, you know, people would get drafted, go into service, so that group went kaput. So I put together a group called Valentine with a bunch of guys I knew that were all really good, were all into the same thing. They were a few years older than me, you know, so put that together, and we started playing the local places in Philadelphia where the big groups came in. In those days, you didn't need a, you didn't need a record deal to be playing. You know, if you were pretty good local group, they would, you know, hedge their bets and have them open for groups. So we opened for like 10 years after Procol Harum, Dave Van Ronk. Well, Bonnie Raitt was my age, so we did a bill together. And Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and who all the groups that came in town. So they rotated about three of the local groups. And that's how we learned, you know, and that was Valentine. That was in 68. We broke up about a year later. Year after that, I started Valentine again with few of the original members, and John Oates from Hall & Oates.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so John was in the group. Actually, Daryl wanted to try out for the group, but we weren't making any money then, and he was just getting married, so he had to go with a bar band. So that would have been interesting. It would have been the original Hall & Oates.
Exactly. That would have been very cool. All right, well, what brought you to work on the 1976 film Rocky?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. That was, you know, my brother used to be somewhat like my roadie at one time, believe it or not. And, you know, he tried to book us and stuff like that. And he wasn't really acting per se. It's like what, you know, like now. I mean, 1960s, it wasn't, you know, just really wasn't one of the things to do, I guess, you know. What happened was he had moved to California. I had my third edition of Valentine. And this was the group that stayed together the longest. We were together from 73 to almost 79.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we played, at that point I was living in New Jersey. I moved to New Jersey to be with the rest of the group, and we worked incessantly, constantly. Okay. So in 1975, you know, my brother was a struggling actor in California. He'd done a few things like Lords of Flatbush, but nothing really big. And he called me up and he said, listen, I'm doing this movie about boxing. You know, I need something kind of like an acapella or something interesting. I said, okay. I had no idea what the hell I was going to do. I mean, I'd never written for a boxing movie, nor did I know how to or ever thought about it, really. So I was living in a really bad neighborhood, too, I got to admit. And I was just sitting there, and I just put the song together. And then the band started going out, playing it and things like that in the bar. And then about 6 months later, he said, hey, I'm coming into Philadelphia. You have the song? I said, sure. So we went down on the street corner and sang the song, forgot about it, got about $140. Didn't realize, you know, of course, the, you know, film company screws everybody. I didn't realize they gave my publishing away. You know, for what they were paying, if it was now, I would have told them where to jump, you know.
Right.
And that's what happened. We forgot about it, and then the next thing we knew, about a year later, I'm walking that street and seeing all these magazine covers with my brother and talking about Rocky and all that stuff, and the rest was just history. But it was basically the only reason I even got in the movie was I was the only musician he knew.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, well, he didn't really know anybody. It wasn't like a like it was a big deal. It was a very low budget movie, you know. So, and that's what happened. So now in this movie, very interestingly, to go backwards, take you back, and then became like kind of a culty song, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, I didn't even, you know, I tried to write some stuff for this new movie, got a few things in, you know, but it was very competitive, very tough, not easy. But unbeknownst to me, all of a sudden he decided to put Take You Back in the beginning of this movie.
Oh, yes.
At 54 seconds, which is a lot on film.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And, I mean, I'm blown away by it. So I'm, you know, I'm out promoting it, and I'm going to release it. I did release it.
Right. Well, so, Take You Back is sort of the is it would be sort of the thread that kind of ties the original 76 to
yeah.
this new film.
Yes.
So, and it's a fantastic song.
Oh, and, thank you very much. And the new and by the way, the new movie is absolutely, I mean, it's awesome.
Okay.
It's, if you liked Rocky One, then you'll love this because you know they didn't really give them too much budget on this one. Okay.
Oh, I
so
see.
It's so it's really close to the vest, eh? And so it's really, it's got a lot of grit to it. It's got a lot of story. It's got a lot of history to it. And obviously, you know, when Take You Back came on, I said, you know, everyone kept telling me. I hadn't seen it yet. I said, wow, Frank, wait till you see what happened with Take You Back. Wait till you see what happened. I said, what do you mean what happened? He goes, wait till you see it. And I saw the opening. I said, wow, this is awesome. Because, you know, it's scanning the whole night skyline, you know, of Philadelphia, you know, bums, people walking in the street, just everyday life, and you hear this song,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, bare bones. So I figured I'd leave the song just like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Rob, maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't. I mean, I think if I would have jazzed it all up and put instruments on, that would take away the whole reason for the song, wouldn't it, in
mm-hmm.
a way? It would really make it almost kind of jive.
Right. Well, you kind of brought it back to its roots.
Yeah. And that's what people liked about it. So I guess we are the little train that could on this situation because, you know, you've got 3-6 Mafia and Natasha Bedingfield and all these big shot acts on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing this all myself. I'm paying for it myself, hiring the people myself, and just, you know, hoping that, you know, the people will dig what's going on with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, how closely does a director become involved in your songs, or do you just submit them? For approval?
Well, I guess, well, you know, him, he's director and producer, he gets real involved with it. I mean, he
mm-hmm.
definitely, basically it's up to him, and I gotta tell you, there were no gimmies on this one, boy. I mean, I worked my butt off, and I wrote about 11, 12 songs,
mm-hmm.
and so I got two original new ones in, so let's, you know, and they're not really featured, okay?
Right.
So, so it was not easy. It was work, and but that's okay. You know, I wasn't expecting any. You know, I wasn't expecting any handouts. You know, I mean that's just the way it goes. You know, but I'm pretty good with it. You know, I'm all right. You know, I just no one owes me a living. But you know, I wanted to go in there and I wanted to, you know, get it on my own basis. You
mm-hmm.
know, stuff like that. So I feel pretty good about that.
So yeah. What is it like working with a family member as opposed to just maybe a director you've sort of worked with before?
What is it like? Let's see. What is it like? It's weird, you know. We're brothers, so, you know, we argue like everyone else. You know, we fight a lot and stuff like that, argue about stupid things, you know, just like any other brothers would.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. This movie, I got to say, was a lot of fun for me because it actually brought me back to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, where I grew up, where were my roots, you know, my music, my everything started.
Right.
And the funny thing was, it almost rings true, as in the movie, which is kind of sad, I got to tell you, Rob. Everything that I grew up with, musically started with, is gone.
Mm-hmm.
All the clubs, it's all gone. There's nothing there anymore. I mean, it's there's really not much left to really hang your roots on.
Right.
Per se, so it's kind of a drag, you know. I mean, that was kind of a sad thing to see when I was there. I was kind of, you know, all the clubs, nothing's there. I mean, they're there, you know. Hmm. Some of the buildings are there, but the Electric Factory, where we saw Hendrix and Cream and is not there. There was a famous group from Toronto we saw there that Skip Prokop was a drummer. They were called the Paupers.
Right.
I saw them like three times. You know, it was Adam Mitchell and Skip Prokop. I saw them about three times at this club. I thought they were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, three guys playing drums, and they're really good writers and stuff like that. But, you know, I remember all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of an interesting thing with Rocky to see that and have the leisure time to do kind of my own little movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did my own little movie within itself, like, what was it like being back, you know? And, but I was pretty, I'm pretty satisfied with the whole thing.
That's good. To tell
you the truth. I think the people are really going to be surprised. I think surprised in the sense because there were a lot of naysayers and being, yeah, we're getting a little old to do this and that and this and that. But I think when they see it, they're going to fall in love with Rocky again.
Mm-hmm. I was just interesting you mentioned that. I just had a chat with our news guy before I started, and I said, "Oh, I'm interviewing Frank Stallone." He goes, "Oh, what's he been doing these days?" And he goes, and then I mentioned, "Oh, he did some songs for Rocky Balboa." And he goes, "Okay, who's starring in that?" And he goes, "Oh, I go Sylvester Stallone. Who else?" He, really? Kind of thing. So yeah,
no, isn't it amazing?
It's amazing. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's like this incredulous type look. I said, but you know what, Val? I said, one day you're going to be 60 and you're going to try to do something. People will go, huh? You know what I mean? They're going to go, huh? What is that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to happen. I'm okay with this whole thing. I think it's really great. I mean, I'm just excited. You know,
right. Well, now you have done numerous songs over the years for various films. I mean, I've personally enjoyed the song that you did for and it was just in my mind now.
Staying Alive.
Thank you.
Oh, Far From Over.
Far From Over. It was it's stuck with me for years. I was able to find the soundtrack. I'm going, yes, I found it after all this time. And Over the Top and all of these other
uh-huh.
movies that you've done. Where do you draw your inspiration for your songs?
God, where do I draw it? I just more or less. How do I really draw? I don't know. To tell you the truth, I think I just really pull it from somewhere. Because I'm not really that. You know, a lot of people are, Rob, compulsive writers, and they write all the time. They go, you know, they have their writing room, and they have this and this. I'm kind of, you know, I'm writing here, laying on the floor when it hits me, you know, because it's really kind of a hard job to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people will sit there and do it. But I remember my best friend, Harry Nilsson, who I thought was just a brilliant artist.
Right.
They didn't have writing rooms. You know, I always found that kind of a little, unless, you know, you're Yasha Heifetz or Arthur Rubinstein or something,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, I'm kind of old school. I kind of sit there with my guitar and write and with a cassette player in front of me. I don't really know how to use all the tools and the Pro Tools, so I'm kind of more of that generation. But I think it just comes. I think what happens, Rob, is that as you just go through your everyday life, your brain is kind of computing information. And then when you kind of focus on something you're going to do, like kind of an idea or a project, then I think all those things start to kind of kick in. And that's probably where I get my inspiration. But I'm not the type of person that can look at a girl walking down the street and go, hey, I'm going to write a song for her.
Okay.
I wish I would. I wish I was that clever, you know? But it's like Billy Joel said something. He said when he sits down to write, it's like a nightmare because it's really hard for him. And, you know, and Billy Joel hasn't done too bad in his life.
Right. Well, now you've collaborated with some of music's finest artists.
Yeah.
How important is the collaboration process to you?
Well, I think the collaboration, Rob, is important in a sense. But, I mean, I have collaborated with some people that are pretty well known. And it wasn't happening at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, you have two kinds of writer. You have the one writer that all of a sudden is coming in and he's very guarded. So he's not giving up any of his little secrets until he finds out if he likes you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So there's that kind of artist. So they're a little stingy in the beginning. So they're kind of sitting around waiting to see what you're going to come up with.
Right.
So all of a sudden, if a song happens, they can just say, well, you know, it really didn't work out, so I'll take my 10%, you know, that kind of thing like that. And then you have people that just fly by the seat of their pants and just, you know, come up with what they're going to come up with. And I think I probably fall more in that category. It's not like I don't really go by the thing, well, this will be my last song. You know, I'll never write again. I'm finished. You know, I don't really kind of go by that theory. I figure, you know, it's a song. I'll write another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but some people, I've been with some people that are really not fun to work with. But a lot of times the big ones are. Or some people get so literal that you can't even write anything. I mean, you know, it's, let's face it, sometimes you listen to some Beatles songs, you go, God, you know, this song sounds great. I don't know exactly what it means, but it's pretty good. You know, they're like it with the and they, and they get all bent out of shape and things like that. So I don't really enjoy writing with those cats too much. I like kind of keeping it pretty loose, you know?
So now, what has been your favorite collaboration? What has been your most memorable?
Well, I'd say memorable, not known, maybe most profitable, most successful is probably with Vince DiCola from the Staying Alive stuff.
Right.
Weird, but we never wrote again. I think the problem was with him, he was really a great musician.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, 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 really great musician. And, you know, of course, I'm not the musician he is, and never said I was. We became successful, but he wanted to be more or less like this Emerson, Lake, and Palmer type thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's not really what I do, you know. So
right. So
we never really wrote again, believe it or not. It was kind of sad because I thought he was really, really great.
Mm-hmm.
And so that didn't happen. Let's see, Harry Nilsson, I didn't actually write with, but we did, you know, since I'm the only guy he ever produced, we did work together. And he was fun to work with because he was, you know, just like real bright and, you know, kind of sarcastic and fun. David Pomerantz was a good writer to work with. Lamont Dozier from Holland Dozier and Holland.
Right.
Were really nice to work with. But, it's not that easy. You know, to do. I mean, it's really not that easy to write with people sometimes because, again, people get very possessive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'd say probably my best writing partner is Tom Morolda. And that album I have Full Circles, like one of my favorite albums, very kind of Beatlesque. And so I'd say Tom is probably my best collaborator to work with.
Okay.
And, you know, you don't find too many. It's amazing when you look back at Tim Pan Alley in the old days. I mean, these guys will write with 100 different people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not that easy. And some people don't write with anybody. You know, I don't think Bob Dylan's ever written with anybody.
Right.
I don't think Joni Mitchell's ever written with anybody. Mm-hmm. And, but my first song with Harry Nilsson was a Joni Mitchell song, believe it or not, called Case of You.